Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's a great pleasure to welcome today's program, Glenn Palanaki, who is VP Industry Solutions Broker and Forwarder at Descartes. And today we're going to talk about the logistics of the de minimis entry. So, we're just a quarter of the way through 2025, but I think we already have a strong contender for word of the year, and that is tariffs. Since inauguration day, tariffs have dominated, the headlines, with so many back and forth changes that, it's, almost on a daily basis, that's making it very difficult for supply chain and global trade executives to just keep up and, know what, what to do. And one of the big changes that has occurred has been with, de minimis entries. So, this was a hot topic of conversation at the Descartes Innovation Forum last October, where I had the chance to not only meet up with Glenn, but also moderate a panel with customs officers, brokers, and freight forwarders on this topic. And it was, again, standing room only in that session. So, what is the de minimis entry? What's changed? What impact is this having on the industry? And what can companies do to prepare for any additional changes? So those are just some of the topics we're going to discuss today. And so it's great to have Glenn on the program to share his insights and advice on this topic. So Glenn, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Glenn, for you and I and folks that are deep into this, we've been following this thing with de minimis, right? Going back to even before the current administration. But for people that may not be familiar, why don't we start at the beginning? I mean, what is, Section 321 Type 86, right? Which is, I guess, the more formal way of talking about this. I mean, what does that mean? What is it for? And why is it important, particularly for the e-commerce industry?
Yeah, so if we just level set, we often use those terms interchangeably, de minimis and Section 321 Type 86. So if I do that, I apologize. But Section 321 Type 86 is really a filing type. But so if we just talk about de minimis at its core, it really is just a mechanism to allow US importers or shippers or customers, whatever you want to call us, to bring in shipments valued at $800 or less without duties and taxes. So it's really intended to simplify and speed up a clearance process for really personal goods that are low risk. So today, though, as you point out, it's primarily focused on high volume, low value e-commerce type shipments. But if you think of its origins, it's almost 100 years ago or so now, 1930, where it was enacted into law. And just most recently, in 2016, there was a big rework, I would call it, where the increase or the threshold of what's allowable went from $200 to $800. So a really significant jump. So the usage since then, especially, has really grown exponentially. And we're talking millions of entries per month, driven by, I'd call it just mainly the e-commerce space. So like, why is it important? Because it really allows you and I as consumers, I'd call it affordable options that probably aren't, 1 or 2 day shipping, what we're used to, especially in the domestic world, but still relatively fast, for a really affordable price. And I know as a consumer, I've ordered things and they'll show up and it's like, oh, wait, what do you mean? I have to sign for this? And you're asking me to pay brokerage fees or import fees? What do you mean? So there's no also sticker shock in this because we as consumers, we order something, we expect to pay it, and we expect it in some time to ship, and it arrives at our door just like really anything else. So I also want to touch on real quick like what the program is not intended for, because I think it helps the scope of conversation. Like the government doesn't want us ordering medicines and so on, something that a PGA or a participating government agency would need to check. Things that need these other government departments like FDA, that's not really eligible for the program. We don't want shipping things like alcohol, tobacco, firearms, that would really circumvent protocols that we have domestically that really are intended to keep us safe. And of course, then there's other goods for anti-dumping or quota. that really are ineligible for the program. And maybe I can set the stage, Adrian, as we talk about some of these other questions. Like a major proof point of this, and I think what a lot of people would understand is really this concept that we have today of social selling. So whether you're on a app or Instagram or Facebook, or there obviously there are so many, but you see an ad that's, I know I have this in my own four walls here. Somebody sees, oh, this is a really cute dress and it's at a great price. And making it easy to buy via social platforms or influencers. So there are well-known names in the industry, big marketplaces offshore that are selling these items. And when you click and buy, it's a very similar e-commerce experience to something that might be coming from a DC or a warehouse, not far down the road. But really, this is being fulfilled in a totally offshore in a different country. So, this concept of social selling has become quite prevalent and quite comfortable, really, for us as consumers, as we buy goods these days.
Yeah, I mean, great summary. And I think, I think it's industry. I mean, when I look at it, and just to kind of maybe paraphrase a little bit or maybe condense it down, I mean, first of all, this thing, de minimis has been around, this type of entry has been around for a very, very
Long
long
time.
time, but it was designed, way before the e-commerce era, right? So now with the rapid rise of e-commerce, we've seen it being utilized in ways that wasn't imagined, let's say, when it was first implemented. Because, historically, this is a revenue stream for customs, right? Because historically, all these products used to come in ocean containers, and they would be, subject to duties and taxes at that point, assuming they didn't fall into some kind of free trade agreement or something like that. So that's number one is, e-commerce has really changed the meaning and significance of this type of entry. I think number two, your last point is right on. It's that e-commerce has also become much more global, right? So we're, it might have been early in the early days, it might have been Amazon, shipping from, its warehouses in Seattle or in Jeff Bezos's garage, shipping books to you. Now when you click the order button, it could be coming from anywhere in the
For
world,
sure.
right? And I think that has implications, as well. And I think I know when you read the stories and the headlines around de minimis these days, it's around some of these fast fashion types of goods, particularly in apparel. Then on the flip side, what it's not meant for is, you also have some of the concerns around, illegal drugs being shipped this way, or quote unquote pharmaceuticals being shipped this way that haven't been, aren't FDA approved or may have some safety concerns. So I think there's a lot of risks involved with this as well when you have literally millions upon millions of these, small packages coming in, every day. So let's talk about the nuts and bolts a little bit. I mean, at a high level, I mean, how does this customs filing process work? I mean, who's involved in the submissions and clearance steps?
Yeah, typically the filings, because of the volumes we're talking about, they're electronic. So that's where the Section 321 Type 86, like the mechanism, comes in. So CBP wants to be able to do, of course, two things. They want to risk and keep us as consumers safe, right? So the data is electronic, and that really allows them to do the risking that they need to do. So there's data elements that are included within that the declaration and security filing. Who's shipping it? Who's the consignee? What's the description, value, HTS, that kind of thing. So HTS meaning the classification, that is a WCO standard. So CBP knows exactly really what that is to a 10-digit, quite granular level. So the services are performed by people like customs brokers who are our subscribers, carriers are subscribers as well, freight forwarders. And of course, just technology providers in general. So CBP gets the information electronically. They may want to do additional verifications on that, or they might just say, those goods are cleared based on the filing that was done. So the goods would generally through air, they would enter the country into a container freight station. Often the packages then are already labeled to be processed by USPS or another integrator, so they would then be delivered to us. So Type 86, just to kind of keep going with the nuts and bolts real quick, It is a pilot program that was launched in 2019 that takes really two parts. So it's the security filing, that's through ACAS or Air Cargo Advanced Screening. And then you have the declaration side, which is under Section 321. And the pilot was created to I think respond to growing e-commerce use, even though maybe 100 years ago, Adrian, I think we couldn't have imagined social selling or just how the supply chain has grown globally. But that pilot was intended to be the electronic use to be able to risk and then to be able to clear the low risk entries under the thresholds published. So for us as consumers to stay, of course, in accordance with legislation and to take, correct use of the program as legislated.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that's the other element here, right? It's going back to the early days to today, right? It's so much more about we're not only talking about the physical movement of the goods, we're also talking now about the ability to capture and transmit and share the necessary data element that customs requires to make this risk assessment to do this clearance process overall, and I imagine that. In this day and age of AI and machine learning and all that, that there's elements of that coming into play to
For
be
sure.
able to more quickly and efficiently try to streamline all these entries. Again, when you talk about millions of these coming through, that data quality, the timeliness and the accuracy and the completeness of that data
Very
is
important.
critical to this, right? So, among the many, actions that the new administration has taken with regards to global trade so far this year was ending the de minimis exception of U.S. imports from China, on February 1st. I mean, what types of, again, logistics issues or challenges did this create for, the ecosystem and, including technology providers?
That was a memorable week, definitely, with the new administration and just additional guidance on on the program. I would say there was definitely disruption, so that happened immediately. Thousands of shipments that were previously eligible under the program were not. So there's implications to that, right, Adrian? Like okay, so there's additional fees. Well, who's going to pay that? I think you layer on top of that, on February 4th, USPS actually said, we're not even going to deliver these. You fast forward 24 hours to the 5th, they actually said, no, okay, we will. So you can imagine at airports that had been previously, processing these millions of entries in the container freight stations, immediately within hours, they're really inundated, and weren't able to process. So, I would say the disruption affected all parts of the supply chain, if I'm honest. So, I work for a technology company, Descartes. So, we had to respond. Immediate is not a strong enough term, in terms of we have subscribers that are relying on us to provide them compliant solutions based on the regulations as we understand them and as they're published. So, as changes came that week, it was okay. So, this is ineligible, whether it's a country of origin or, whatever else it might be. What can we do to change our systems? And we are, publicly traded company. So we have regimented rules on, how do we release, and there's methodologies around that. That was challenged, to say the least. So we were really burning the candle from both ends, if I'm honest. So for all the way from product people, R&D folks, all our customer facing folks, it was quite literally all hands on deck, to say, okay, how can we support our customers well? How can we make changes to the solution to be able to support how we understand the regulations, today? So, and that's not even talking about our subscribers who are quite literally on the front lines, working with marketplaces, working with container freight stations to get this process, because probably who was shielded most from it, if I'm honest, is probably you and me as a consumer. We probably didn't know. That things were happening, because why? Supply chain just always gets the job done. It's so resilient. So, big delays that week, the flip-flop of, USPS is even a great example. So everybody was really just facing an unknown. realistically higher costs in terms of, oh, I need more storage, or oh, I have to pay these extra fees so I can get it to my customer, or I need to figure out a way to let them know, oh, by the way, that $10 item is not $10 anymore. I either can't deliver it to you, or I'm choosing not to, or you got to pay more. So confusion, disruption reigned that week, but just kudos to, I would just say, the supply chain in general for always rallying, coming to solutions.
Yeah, I think it was a classic example of the law of unintended consequences, right? And just and I think it's just a perfect example of how, a supposed, just one change can have all this ripple effect and opens up again a Pandora's box
For
of,
sure.
of different questions. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, normally, I think my understanding whenever there's any kind of like customs change is usually like a commenting period, and then there's like, you get certain number of weeks or months, particularly from a technology provider, for you to then make the changes to the technology, do the testing, make sure that it's going to be in compliance and so forth. And you basically had zero time to do that. You had to, like, the proverbial saying, you had to like make fixes to the airplane while it's still flying,
And
right?
flying for sure. So some programs, we quite literally, it's not a lie to say we have 10 years or a decade or a greater part of a decade to implement different. So that's quite difficult as a technology company. Some programs just seem to never be implemented. And I don't want to pick on any specific country or any specific program, but I think you'd agree there's some that we just keep hearing of year after year after year. It's like, oh, I thought that was implemented. Nope, still not fully implemented. And then there's something like this, which is quite literally a bulletin. And it's like, no, you've got to do this now. And everybody's under the microscope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everybody, ultimately, as you said, this disruption occurred, this mini chaos occurred, if you will, particularly those early hours and days. And ultimately, the administration, reversed course and reinstated the exception, less than a week later, I think on February 7th. I mean, what impact, I mean, did this have on e-commerce shippers and sellers, carriers and customs brokers and technology providers like you guys?
Yeah, I think it was almost it's a twofold. It was almost another layer of confusion on a layer of confusion, and yet it was also okay. So we know the legacy filing options we have. So there was also okay. So we're going back to it, meaning trade continues to flow, right? But we know this is likely not the last time we're going to be talking about this. So providers like ourselves, all those changes that we made literally quite on, earlier in the week or night overnight, meaning there were transactions that ended up being filed under a different filing type just to keep them going. Well, it was like, okay, so what do we do? Do we reverse those and are they eligible again under the program? And so there was a bit of confusion on like, well, things that were, before they arrived during that week, well, how do they apply versus, okay, Friday, now we know anything going forward from today goes back to, I'd call it traditional or legacy processing. So there's a lot of confusion around there, but it was almost, okay, we did all this work. Now we as supply chain are kind of reversing it and going back to what it was, Sunday evening, as it were, the Sunday before. So we also got a little bit of understanding as well on, we often talk about trade and supply chain. CBP and the government, they're also part of that. There's sometimes a bit of a, I don't, mystery's too strong of a word, but there's inner workings that I'd say, just as citizens, we're not always privy of, right? So if we were under a microscope, we know and we can assume and we can imagine that was difficult for them as well. So whatever motivated the turn, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know all the elements, Adrian, but obviously there were reasons for that. And we can assume the challenges that we faced, they probably faced as well. So there was a bit of, I'd call it relief, that we were going back to a process that trade knows, including CBP. Whether there were changes that couldn't be done by a technology provider or by others in the supply chain, I don't want to infer that. But there was then, okay, a bit of comfort. Let's go. We're going back to a process we know and understand.
So again, it's just like you said before. I mean, to the average consumer, we have no visibility to any of that, right? We don't see how the sausage is made, right? All we care
Sure.
about is that the package arrives. But it's amazing, in that time period. Maybe I'm sure some folks experienced some delays in getting their packages and everything else while they were caught in this purgatory, if you will, trying to figure out whether they go to heaven or hell,
Yeah.
but for the most part, most folks that were not plugged into the inner workings of supply chain management, in particular global trade management, had no idea that this was going on. So as a way to wrap up and look ahead, I mean, where do we stand today, and are there any potential changes to de minimis entries in the near future? And if so, what can organizations do today to prepare for these changes?
Yeah, it's a great question to land us here. So I think if we're honest, like changes have already been happening, right? So there were some in the fall, and even the previous administration had put out some White House bulletins in September saying, "Hey, this is what you can expect going forward." I think there was still some clarity that we were looking for as trade, but change has been on the horizon for a while. So that was previous administration, obviously, with the current administration too. So we've heard some of this from CBP and others for a while. TSA on the security side, they had made changes, which of course we as software providers and trade complied with. That was back in the fall. So the latest guidance is we should be expecting some further clarifications as early as April. Where we can expect more information. So what that might be, I don't know. So I wouldn't propose that I understand everything that's going to happen. So there could be just possibly tighter compliance and data requirements like we've seen in the past. Even potential limitations on what me as a consumer, what my ability, the 800 might change, but that's what it is today. So that could, or just eligibility in general from different countries. So I don't want to infer what that's going to be, but I think we should get greater clarity even in the coming weeks, or as early as the coming weeks. So what should people do to be ready? I think it's the classic, like, who are you partnering with from a technology side that's going to walk the path and walk the journey with you, serve you well, be there with you when it seems like, one bulletin kind of changes your life and you got to react to supply chain. But I think, that the adage of we want to get the job done for our consumers, we hope that actually for consumers, there isn't a huge disruption. So there might be changes on what they can buy socially. But at the same time, we're going to work within whatever the regulations end up being, and supply chain finds a way. That's kind of it. So maybe I can just leave just from an educational element. Like we are talking about pretty gigantic volumes. There's probably a 35 to 40% since the pilot went in 2019, year over year. So that's an expl look, it's not a gigantic, that's an explosive growth. And we're talking, CBP has said for last year, we're talking about 1.36 billion. De minimis entry. So whatever change it is, we are talking about huge numbers. So there's impact across the board. So as consumers, what they can or can't buy, what supply chain can or can't ship, what marketplaces can and can't sell, or from where, from what origin. So I wanted to say that because, we're not talking about just a few shipments here and there or a few consolidations that are coming from some part of the globe. We are talking about gigantic volumes. So we're here as a software provider. We're expectant. We're waiting. We're going to be there with our subscribers and customers with whatever guidance we get. So we're in it for the long haul. So what our subscribers need, that's what we aim to provide.
Great. So it sounds like, obviously stay informed,
For
because
sure.
there are changes for sure that are coming, and the details are to be determined. Number two is make sure you have the right partners in place, technology partners, freight forwarders, brokers, et cetera, that you're working with, that are they themselves are staying informed, and you've got the trust and confidence that they're going to be able to execute when the time comes on making sure that whatever changes come down the road, that they'll be able to respond to them quickly, efficiently, accurately, and so forth to make sure that you can manage your supply chains as transparently and as efficiently as possible. Let's just hope that whatever changes come, they give you more than a few minutes to implement those changes, that they actually give you
But maybe not.
some on-ramp time to kind of make, but maybe not. You can never, I mean, I think the other crazy thing is that everything that we talked about in this episode today, by the time we publish this episode, it could all be out of date because that's just the way that things
Indeed.
have been going,
Could be.
right? Well, Glenn, listen, this was a great conversation, very timely, very relevant, very important. And I'm sure that again, we could probably meet up again in about 6 months' time and see
Think
where we're
so.
at, because I'm sure that there'll be new developments and new learnings by then. But for now, thank you very much for making the time to be with us.
Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate it.
I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you're watching this episode on demand, either on the Talking Logistics website or at the Descartes website, you can post a question there for Glenn, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.